everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, I cannot complain about the weather. When I have 70 degrees out there, that's my kind of comfort zone. That's my sweet spot.
Well, the prediction is we're going to be at least in the mid-60s, maybe upper 60s for the next week or so.
Oh, I can dig it. There you go. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. It is Friday. It's the 21st of January, 2022. So here we are, 3 weeks into the new year. We are on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI, The Voice. Just so excited that we made year 12. We're into the 12th year of the radio show. And I'm pretty excited about the fact also 34 years on TV and radio here in this Tucson market, tack on maybe another 20 before I got to Tucson. And we're talking more than a half century involved in the news gathering communication business. Worldwide live listening for our program and podcast of the show at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, I like to do a big shout out on Friday. I know Dylan Smith has been just a loyal partner to the show. Dylan does such a great job at TucsonSentinel.com. Dan Shear, our friend at the Green Valley News, and Soharita Sun, Jim Ninsel, our friend at the Tucson Weekly with the Tucson Local Media Group. They have a portfolio of publications, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times, along with the Tucson Weekly. Our Friday Focus interview on our live line is Pima County Health Director Dr. Teresa Cullen, and with me in studio, Arizona Daily Star reporter Eddie Salaya. Eddie, how are you, first of all?
I am doing great, and I just want to second your endorsement of the weather.
Yeah.
I am out here in a, flip-flops, mm-hmm. shorts, and a t-shirt, and it is just heaven outside.
It is. I think we love that 70-degree mark, don't we?
This is what sets Arizona apart.
You bet.
These few months.
What about you, Dr. Cullen? You enjoying the weather?
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm so lucky it's warm.
So we can talk about that as something very good. Let's talk about something that's very troublesome. We really have so much COVID-19 in this community with Omicron just ripping across Arizona. Arizona, unfortunately, has not peaked yet. Nearly half of the 50 states, the latest numbers I've seen, look like they are peak and are going down. That's good news. Overview of the situation, in your opinion, Dr. Cullen.
Great. Well, first, I always want to just appreciate the opportunity to be able to share information with you and your listeners. It's always great to have this venue available to us. So let's start with where we are with cases. I think that's one thing that's important to people. You know, overall, we've had over 210,000 cases since the beginning of the pandemic. Today, we reported over 2,600 cases in the last 7 days, over 17,000. If you look at what we call our epi curve, which is where we plot time and date, we are at the highest number of cases that we have reported on a daily basis for the last few days. So we remain aware that Omicron has not peaked here, like you already mentioned, that we are in the midst of an accelerated phase of the pandemic. The positivity rate, which is concerning to us, that's the number of people that test that have a positive result, has been running a little over 25%. The past couple days, we've even touched 30%. We've had events where we've gone out and tested like in a specific community and had 35% to 40% positive. So what that means is there's a lot of disease out there, and people really need to take every opportunity they can to protect themselves.
Well, one thing that isn't really articulated that often through this whole thing, you've got a lot of positive testing. Give me your take on, of all of those positive cases, I know this is pretty hard to really definitely say, but percentage-wise, those that do not show symptoms and they have tested positive. In other words, they don't even know, perhaps, that they had had it unless they had had the test.
Yeah, this is a great question. I don't have 100% accurate information. What we have mostly is anecdotal. And let me explain why we don't have more accurate information. When we go out, the way we know whether you've been symptomatic or not is if you help us answer the questions from what we call a case investigation. So when you are diagnosed with COVID, you get the term a case applied to you. Only about 45 to 50% of people respond to our contacts. So that's the information we have. Of that group, we think about 50 to 60% are symptomatic. Now, the caveat to that, Bill, though, is that, you know, symptoms can be very minimal, right? You can have the sniffles for 3 hours, and when we ask you, it's now 2 days later, and you don't remember, and you think, oh, no, I didn't have anything. So by and large, though, the national data would say somewhere between 60 and 70% of people have some symptom. It might not be an overwhelming symptom, but there's something that accompanies their disease.
As Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who I really like following him, the former FDA commissioner, and I think he said today on CNBC that by the time the whole thing is blown through, like mid-February, we could have 40 to 50% of the people that had some kind of Omicron exposure. It's just amazing. It's unprecedented when you think back to Thanksgiving weekend when we heard the news about South Africa. Look how this has ripped through our population, the Europe, South Africa. It's just really, it's a story that the public health historians, Dr. Cullen, will be writing about forever.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I also agree with Dr. Gottlieb. I think that we are probably going to be close to that 40 to 50%. And you can see that because of the number of tests that we know about. Remember, lots of people are testing at home. We do have a way for them to report those tests, but the vast majority of people don't. But yesterday or in the last few days, we've been testing on average 3 to 8,000 tests a day. Very, very significant tests throughout the county. Those are not all at the county sponsored test sites. And if 30% of them are positive, that's a large number of people.
Let's bring in my friend, Eddie Salea of the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie, go ahead. You're with Dr. Cullen.
Hi, Dr. Cullen. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Eddie.
Pretty. Hey, how are you? So I've got a quick question. Obviously, with all of this virus and with the kind of increase in testing as well, have we seen a decrease in hospital capacity to go along with this surge?
Yeah, yes, we have. So I can share the numbers that we've been seeing in the last couple days. We have very limited ICU beds. We haven't gotten to zero, which is great. And remember, it's always a point in time. And the hospitals, the healthcare systems are doing an amazing job making sure that there's room for anybody that's ill to get their appropriate care. But we have limited ICU capacity because of beds as well as staffing. You know, lots of people are out with the illness themselves, healthcare workers. In addition, the overall what we call medical surge beds, those are the adult beds for people that have medical or surgical illnesses, are limiting. We are seeing high numbers of hospitalizations. I use this number of 400. If we hit over 400 people in the hospital with COVID, we start seeing really concerning capacity limitations. And we've been over 400 for the past couple of days.
You know, I have another question related to testing. Our Pima County reporter, Nicole Luden, reported that FEMA will be opening up an additional testing site here in Tucson next week, next Monday. Will that be enough to meet the demand? I've been out at some of the county run handout sites, and sometimes these lines are bordering on miles long. Will this be enough to meet the demand or to test our way out of this virus?
Yeah, this is such a great question. First off, I want to thank everybody in the community who's seeking testing. If they're symptomatic, we really recommend that. We have lots of other people testing besides the county, but let's talk about the county. Right now, we're on average doing about 1,500 to 2,000 tests. test a day at the county-sponsored facilities. Mm-hmm. FEMA is bringing, and I really want to give a shout-out to them, they're bringing the capacity of 2,000 tests a day. And in addition, you may be aware the Board of Supervisors voted earlier this week on Tuesday to expand testing with one of our major contractors, Paradigm, and we are anticipating they will be able to handle 1,000 tests a day. Now, FEMA has a soft opening tomorrow, full opening on Monday. Paradigm, we hope, will open late next week. So we're more than doubling the amount of testing that will be available from the county-sponsored sites. If everybody else continues to test at the level they have been, I do anticipate that we will be able to meet the need.
Yeah, and I had a question about the national effort with four testing kits per family. I've ordered ours. The minute that became available, I went on to the website and ordered four tests for our family. That should help lessen the load, shouldn't it, a little bit, Dr. Cullen?
Yes, and in addition, as you know, we did a real push on at-home testing distribution primarily through our libraries, though we also do that through our schools as a priority population. But we do hope that this distribution of four testing kits per family, which looks like it'll probably happen, hopefully delivery will within 7 to 14 days, will help augment the testing capacity.
Go ahead, Eddie.
You know, I have a little question that really kind of delves more into your history. You know, you've got a varied history where you've worked in academia, the private sector, and in government work, and helped with the response to Ebola. How did that help you for preparing for something like this? The first real worldwide global pandemic, and managing it here specifically in Pima County.
What a great question. I haven't thought about that in a while. Well, I want to posit, at least initially, I don't think anything could have prepared me for this and for the months that and the years that this has been ongoing. But I will say that as a public health service officer, I had multiple deployments in post-crisis situations, occasionally post-conflict situations, where I learned fairly quickly how to work with teams and how to do appropriate epidemiological response, including, you know, making sure the logistics was there, making sure the resources were there, working with the individuals. The one thing I would call out on this, though, is because of the chronicity of it, the impact on the response teams, not just public health, but definitely public health, as well as the healthcare workers and the other essential workers, frontline workers that we have out there, has never happened before. So when you think Ebola, which was a crisis, and the mortality rates were much higher than much higher than we are seeing here. But, you know, the average response worker who was an expat, like somebody not from Sierra Leone, was in country for 6 to 8 to 12 weeks. Nobody did this for 2 years. I think that that's the major difference, and that's the thing I don't think any of us would have anticipated.
When you think about it, I know my wife and I were in line at the TCC a year ago this week, joining hundreds of other people when the word got out, hey, there's some vaccine available. Right. If you come over to the TCC, stand in line. Even if you don't have an appointment, maybe there'll be some leftover vaccine at the end of the day. Hundreds of people showed up. And when you think about where we have been, Dr. Cullen, just in the past 12 months, but then think about the past 2 years, it seems like such a long, long time.
Yeah, it does seem like a long time, and I really want to ensure people that we are doing everything we can to help us get to a different post-pandemic resilient recovery phase. And I do want to take the opportunity, as I always do, Bill, to remind people that one way we get out of this is to vaccinate. So
yes.
As you recall, there were long lines there. I want those long lines again. I want people to go to TCC and get their boosters. What we're seeing is a lull in the number of people that are seeking boosters. And as of this morning, at least, only 39% of people that were eligible for boosters have gotten them. So
that's too bad.
Yeah, so go there now, and I promise there won't be a long line. You won't have to wait.
There you go. Let's pause right here, Dr. Cullen and Eddie, and talk about something everybody always agrees on. They love Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. I know I'll be making a Mona's run at some point over the weekend because I've had a particular pastry in mind. Yes, I have lost 5 or 6 pounds in the last 3 weeks, which I wanted to do. I wanted to take a little bit of that holiday weight off, but I'm going to treat myself up at Mona's this weekend and go for one of those Danish with the apricot filling. There's no question. It's been on my mind, a little bit of a treat. I think I owe it to myself, a little bit of comfort food. These are pretty stressful times, and I'll tell you, Mona's Danish Bakery, their business is off the charts, and I think part of it is people equate the bakery with comforting food, and they are open right now if you'd like to sample it. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, open for lunch right now. You can do breakfast anytime after they open at 6:30 in the morning, and they are open on Tuesday through Sunday. They are taking now Monday off. Well deserved. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Dr. Cullen sticks around on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Eddie Salea is with me from the Arizona Daily Star. A lot more to talk about with Dr. Cullen right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today, Dr. Teresa Cullen is with us. She is the Pima County Health Director. With me in studio, Dr. Cullen is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our friend, Arizona Daily Star reporter, Eddie Salaya. Dr. Cullen, we talked a little bit about the limited ICU beds, the situation in a normal winter, even before COVID, let's go back, say, even 2 years, the winter of, say, 2019-2020, before COVID really hit us in March. Flu, cold, respiratory situation, always an issue. And so what we've had this year is this commingling of these different, in many cases, with similar symptoms. What is the flu picture like this year?
This is such a great question. The flu is usually see it this time of year. We are seeing flu. We're not higher than we've been in the past. We're, in fact, a little lower. We still want to be attentive to that. We want to remind people to make sure, while we're talking about COVID vaccine, that they also get their flu vaccine. But the good news is we're not seeing an acceleration of flu. However, what you said is really true, Bill, right? Like, flu and COVID are somewhat difficult to distinguish between.
Yes, yes, indeed. Before I go to Eddie, because I know Eddie's going to change gears here on us to go off COVID for a little bit, but I know I have a question from one of our callers about COVID, so I will go now to the live line. Matt has called us. Go ahead, Matt. You're with Dr. Cullen.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Cullen. Real quickly, it's my understanding that the COVID tests are about $100. Recently, the Pima County Board of Supervisors, I assume at your department's request, asked for money. I think they allocated $3 million. I think you're even considering allocating another $3 million. Initially, a couple weeks ago, or actually maybe 3 weeks ago, the manager's office had indicated that they're looking at, you know, the issue of funding sources. I gather that you're drawing this from ARPA funds.
What is ARPA?
The American Recovery.
Okay, go ahead.
Act. Generally, I believe that you, you know, it looks like they keep having to respond to, you know, all of the ups and downs, and I understand that because of the overall nature of this pandemic. But do we have a general plan overall, and how are you tracking the money, and do you feel comfortable that you have, in now 2 years of this, do you have the staffing, resources, and money to deal with what we're dealing with right now and what may come down in the future? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Go ahead, Doctor.
Oh, Matt, great, great macro as well as micro questions. So let me do this from a macro perspective to start with, and then I'll talk specifically about our staffing. So we have worked closely with the CARES Act funding. You remember that was the very first tranche of funding. And then we've worked closely with the board as well as the administrator for the ARP funding. That funding was allotted primarily for public health, and we do have a spend plan associated with. That's multi-year funding. Our goal is to try to ensure that we have adequate funding to get through what we don't really know is coming. So we anticipate 18 to 24 months out. And I do believe that we will have adequate funding. And what you talked about is right. What you see is us move funding resources around to meet what is considered to be the more urgent need. Now, our hope in terms of testing is, even though there was that authorization from the Board of Supervisors, FEMA is starting also. And we do hope to get through this Omicron surge sometime soon. FEMA will be here 3 to 4 weeks. Hopefully that will get us through that surge, and we will not need to move any additional money for testing. That would be the ideal, beyond what just happened this week at the board, which you are appropriate to note. In terms of, do we have this large general plan that has helped ensure that we have enough staffing and resources. Once again, I hearken back to what I previously said. I don't think while we keep planning for what we anticipate will happen, COVID has thrown us some loops here. We have been able to keep up with the staffing needs as we have them right now, and we do have long-term, meaning 3 to 5 year plans in the works to help ensure that we can recover from this. These are great questions,
though. Very good question. On the money picture, which is always very important, here's Eddie Salea, and Eddie's going to change gear. One of the beats that Eddie is on is the marijuana beat. Go ahead, Eddie.
Well, yeah, I wanted to change gears a little bit, but still focus maybe on COVID as well. There's been a few studies done that have come out that have spoken towards CBDs and other active cannabinoid compounds found in marijuana perhaps being beneficial in protecting against COVID transmission. I guess number one, Doctor, how much credence do you put into these reports, this research? And number two, is it, you know, are stoners finally going to inherit the earth here? Is this finally our time?
I don't know.
Well, I don't think they're probably going to inherit the entire earth. They might inherit part of the dirt here. So let me go to that first one. You know, I think, as you know, there's been increasing research being done with CBD, different parts of the cannabinoid. And I think this is really a wait and see time period. I don't want to be dismissive of it, but I wouldn't at this point endorse it because I don't think that there's longitudinal data, especially with COVID, the changes in COVID, right? So the issue is if what worked for Delta works, will it then work for Omicron? So I think we need to see. Remember, that's why we change things, because the COVID itself keeps being modified. However, I don't want to be dismissive. I think it's important that, Eddie, that we look at what may be different ways of treating. You know, we are so seeking therapeutics as well as preventive interactions and actions that we can implement.
Gotcha. Well, I've got another question. It has a little bit more to do with the county health department's kind of role in educating people about recreational and medical marijuana to begin with. I know as part of Prop 207, some of the tax dollars go towards the state health department and county health departments kind of, I guess, doing outreach. Can you kind of explain how those dollars are used and what you see your department's role in the further rollout of both of these programs going forward is?
Yes, this is a great question. And what I will tell you is that we are solely in the planning phase. So in June, you may be aware that Prop 207 gives us a small cut of the taxation money that comes in, and it comes to the county in twice a year. At this point, for this past year, it came in June and December. These are not large amounts, $200,000. When we got the first one, we held on to it because we were like, well, what's this going to do? Is it going to keep coming or not? And then in December, we did get another payout in quotes from the state, about the same amount of money. So we are currently deciding upon what is the appropriate utilization of this funding. Remember, the funding has a few focuses. One is public health. One is the justice system. One is trying to ensure that people get education, like you're talking about. So I would envision that most of the funding that we have will go into developing not only an education campaign in the traditional way, you know, but also outreach with community-based organizations who are already out there doing a lot of this work.
Eddie, I'm going to switch back here. I've got another COVID question. Do you have any idea? I like some of these percentages because it sort of gives people a big picture. Any idea percentage roughly of those testing positive have been fully boosted? And that, of course, We talked the last time you were on the show about breakthrough infections, mm-hmm. and at that time we really weren't talking that much about Omicron. We were talking about Delta. And at that point, breakthroughs were fairly rare with the Delta. How is it different this time, Dr. Cullen?
Oh, I wish I could answer your question. I'm going to share with you the information I know.
Okay.
So the overall breakthrough, what we're seeing is a slight increase. So we were running around 27 to 28%. That means of the people that were being diagnosed, 27 to 28%. So 27 to 28 people out of 100 had previously been fully vaccinated.
Mm.
That rate right now is a little higher. It's around 32%.
Wow. So
32 out of every 100 have been fully vaccinated. But your question is, how many of those fully vaccinated have been boosted? And you know, we don't know that. And the reason why we don't know that is the software system. Well, first off, there's lots of cases, so we really need to do it with a computerized system. The computerized system, I know this is sad to say, but it's run by the state, and it was just updated in the last 3 weeks to include the third shot. So
mm-hmm.
be able to record the booster in the situation where there was a case with somebody diagnosed. So I would hope next time you have me on,
yeah.
I'll be able to answer that question.
Yeah, and it gets back to something I'm just very troubled about. You said that really a little more than one in three people who had the first two shots in what is now considered the standard three series, only about one in three have had the third shot. What's going on? Why would you be reluctant to go ahead and get a booster?
Yeah, you know, I think there's probably a lot of reasons, but the one data point I want to share with you, and this just came out from what we call MMWR, which is the CDC weekly publication. I'm reading, unvaccinated
sure.
Americans 50 years and older were about 45 times more likely to be hospitalized than those who were vaccinated and had a booster. So if those are the kind of numbers that I hope would activate people to go actively seek to get their third shot, get their booster.
You must
45 times.
You must be a mind reader, because that was I have that right in front of me. I have that.
Oh.
That was the next thing I was going to follow up with, published in USA Today, the headline, unvaccinated seniors almost 50 times,
yeah.
50 times more likely to be hospitalized, the CDC data shows. That just came out, so I don't know if you must have had a clairvoyant moment.
Well, no, do you know what, though, Bill? I think what this shows, and Bill and Eddie, is mm-hmm. it's basically because it's such a frightening number.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it stops you in your tracks. Like, you want to say, oh, that can't be real.
Yeah.
But then I looked at the data, and actually, it really is true.
Mm. Eddie, you got something else?
Doctor, I guess, you know, and it's related to what we just talked about right there. There are going to be those folks, though, out there, vaccine hesitant folks, who will say, you know, well, I don't trust the CDC anymore. I don't trust these authorities because of, you know, changes to official policies or whatever it might be. So what kind of education do you give to those sort of folks? What is the way to convince those folks that actually, you know, in fact, this is pretty solid science that we're talking about here?
Yeah, you know, public health is predicated on taking people where they are and providing them appropriate education through a trusted partner. And you hit on this thing or this perception about the role of the CDC. I guess what I would urge people is they can trust me. They may not know me personally, but what we know is that what influences behavior, you know, whether it be your faith, your church, your business partners, your family members, are having someone that you trust and believe in, that encourages you, answers your questions, and hopefully is there with you if you go get your shot, if you've been vaccine hesitant. You know, I think our role is not to criticize. It's not to be pejorative or judgmental. It's really to say, let's take you from where you are to where we believe is where we need to be right now.
Doctor, have you seen, I mean, you know, you were in the Ebola response. Have you seen this sort of phenomenon before, this sort of vaccine hesitancy?
Well, I think we see it with the flu every year, if we go back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing, you know, we have to applaud the county. People are at a much higher rate of vaccination than they would have been if this was just the flu,
mm-hmm.
because our influenza vaccination rates are usually like maybe 55 to 70%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in those over 65, we are at like 97% with the primary series, so not with the boosters. So I think that the hesitation is really multifactorial. And I also think, to go back to the discussion we had previously, there's a lot of pandemic fatigue. And accompanying that is, you know, from the healthcare workers, what we call compassion fatigue. But I just think people are tired.
All right, we're going to have to let you go, Dr. Cullen. Until next time, I'm not sure, but I'm very, very hopeful that the next time we speak with you, there will be a lot better news. And I think it would be a service in case someone has been listening and perhaps they're out and about and say, you know, maybe I'll go get that booster. Can they go? Is there somewhere you would suggest where there may not be a wait, or how would that work?
Yeah. Well, right now, TCC, Tucson Convention Center, okay. If you're downtown. No waits there. And then Abrams, which is our public health clinic building, which mm-hmm. is right by Keno, what people know as Keno Banner South. We're open to available for vaccinations. So
and there is no
opportunity.
And there is no charge.
No charge, no insurance collected. Just please come in and let us give you your booster.
All right. Dr. Cullen, thank you very much. I'll look forward to our next visit.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Eddie, too.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back, Buckmaster, on a Friday. Eddie Salea with me, my friend from the Arizona Daily Star. One of his assignments is covering the really, really fast-growing medical and recreational marijuana market. How big is that in the first year? You got any numbers yet on that, Eddie?
Yeah, it's over $2 billion in sales between a little bit more than $1 billion on the recreational side, a little bit less on the medical side. But yeah, that's a pretty good amount of green coming in and pretty good amount going out too, it sounds like.
38 states with some form of medical or recreational marijuana use. New Mexico is going to join the recreational column soon.
It is. You know, if you follow my work at Tucson.com and the Arizona Daily Star, I'll be doing a little bit of a profile on New Mexico's rollout, particularly Albuquerque's.
Because you were just over there.
I was just over there. Mm-hmm. It is beautiful.
Yeah.
It is, in a lot of ways, a carbon copy of Tucson, mm-hmm. down to the size, down to their sandias being kind of similar to our Catalinas. But
they even have billboards about a block from here recruiting our police officers.
Yes, yes, they do.
Come to Albuquerque. Yeah, because you're right. It is very similar in kind of size. And I think the demographic is pretty similar, too.
Very similar.
So what assurance, Eddie Salea, is there that if somebody buys marijuana in this state, they're getting what they paid for? In other words, they're expecting to have marijuana.
So up until 2020, there was no guarantee. But now, after, Prop 207 passed, so for the recreational side, and then there was a law that they passed on the medical side, now there has to be third-party testing for both potency, so that folks know, hey, this weed's pretty powerful, it might mess you up, and for contaminants, so that folks know that it is safe. They test for heavy metals, microbes, pesticides, and
mold.
Mold, yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. And it is that's how we're able to pass off anything sold on the shelves here in Arizona's dispensaries. You can ask for the tested results of it. So, yeah, and most distributors also put some sort of packaging or some sort of labeling on there that lets them know, hey, this is pretty potent and this has passed third-party inspection.
So you're saying, and I've got your story that was in the Star recently, you wrote, Eddie, that many brands advertise their most potent marijuana flower to be 30% THC by volume. What does that mean?
So that basically means that about a third of, a plant that you would be holding in your hands is pretty much THC active, I forget the actual name right there, but it's the active component, the active psychoactive component in marijuana. So that is, when they say 30%, that is a very potent plant.
You talked about the big five contaminants. I guess there could be really some other stuff that'd be really bad for you in there too.
Yeah, there's some stuff if it's tested for, you know, they can remediate. And basically if it was, remediation means if it came to you as marijuana flower, it'd be like, oh, hey, we're going to turn this into edibles. But some stuff, if it's in there, I believe some forms of Aspergillus, some E. coli, that's a no-no. You got to destroy that.
So this is really now a well-defined quality control component of the state law.
Totally, totally. This was, I mean, really for the industry in this state to be taken seriously, this was something that needed to happen.
And you brought up something with Dr. Cullen, and our thanks to Dr. Cullen for giving us 40 minutes, a really very transparent, great interview. You brought up this, that there was a little money that comes to the county health departments. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think she said $200,000 that would be used for education purposes.
It's some education purposes in some ways. There's also some social justice requirements that are also in there. But I'd love to see what these education mm-hmm. what it looks like
what
in the outreach.
Yeah. How is that going to work? How would they promote that? I don't know.
I think that what they'll probably do is like, hey, don't bring this to school, sort of thing. Keep it out of the high schools.
Yeah.
So
don't drive.
Yeah, that's another one.
Don't drive and smoke
exactly
marijuana.
Because you know, one thing that they did see in at least in the immediate aftermath after recreational legalization in Colorado was a slight uptick in DUIs for marijuana.
All right, Eddie Soleil of the Star. We will look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie, thank you very much. Until the next time, always a pleasure.
Oh, Bill, thank you so much. I love coming on. You have
thank
a good
you.
One.
Thank you very much. We're coming up now with our weekend watch to kick off the weekend. Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business is going to be joining us on the live line right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Let's do it. It's Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Who in the world isn't ready for a road trip these days? It's only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do over in Silver. Hike in the Gila National Wilderness. How about the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument? For things to do, and there are a lot of them, places to stay, and there are a lot of great places to stay in the area. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is. Is the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business, food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how did the week go for you?
Well, the week went great, and the weekend is here. And as I was sharing with Tom on the other side of the glass, this is a glorious one. I will be spending most of it outdoors this weekend.
I bet you will, and you might have a glass of wine in one hand.
You think? You know, one of the things that Nancy and I just love to do in the world of wine is what's called a vertical tasting, where you essentially taste the same wine from the same grape, from the same vineyard, but from different years, just to compare the differences that things like climate can have on a wine year after year. Well, our friends from Arizona Wine Collective in St. Philip's Plaza, they're going to be hosting a vertical tasting this weekend of one of their top-selling wines, the Blacklisted Red Blend from Golden Rule Vineyards. And they're going to be pouring the 2015, 16, and 17 varieties. I think it's going to be a fun and instructive exercise in putting your palate to work. It's all weekend long at Arizona Wine Collective.
Let's go vertical. I love it. Yeah, sounds cool. All right, Girl Scout cookie time again.
Yeah, you know, the trend of pairing Girl Scout cookies and craft beer is off the charts these days. You heard it right, Bill. And you're going to get to taste this trend at various breweries and tap rooms across town this weekend. Places like Dillinger Brewing and Tap and Bottle, they're going to be serving flights of beers intentionally designed to pair with this full spectrum of iconic cookies. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking that a rich and robust porter-style brew would go quite well with one of those delicious peanut butter tag-along cookies. You know, maybe that trefoil shortbread cookie screams for a farmhouse-style saison. Nothing is off-limits, so have fun sipping and snacking this weekend to support our local Girl Scouts.
Gee, what would work now with one of those famous Samoa Girl Scout cookies? Let's see, what kind of a chocolate Samoa and what kind of wine? Boy, it sounds like well, maybe wine, but no, this would be beer. Okay, you got
Nothing's off limits, like
there,
I said.
There you go. Hey, Tucson Wings, are they expanding?
Yeah, you know what? Some hot news just released from the folks at Jam Culinary Concepts. No stranger to your audience, Bill. They just opened their newest restaurant, which is welcome news to chicken wing enthusiasts like me. It's called Tucson Wings. Just call it what it is, on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana. And these flappers are served in half-pound, one-pound, and two-pound servings with six different sauces, six different rubs, along with essential side dishes like fried pickles, of course. Now, for me, it'll be 2 pounds of Jamaican jerk wings at Tucson Wings this weekend.
Boy, that sounds like it might be a nice pairing with all the with the professional football that's coming up this weekend.
Go Bills! Buffalo Bills, baby!
Yeah, I've got a few seconds. I wanted to ask you about Bills. Where did that all come from, your love for the Buffalo team?
So as you might know, my father is a native Buffalonian,
right.
And so even though I was born and raised myself in Washington, D.C., and have long been a Washington football team fan, I've always had an affinity for the Buffalo Bills. They are my AFC team, and Bills fans across the country, like myself, are really giddy about the game on Sunday. We're going to be playing the Kansas City Chiefs. A little redemption, because the Chiefs kept us from going to the Super Bowl last year, so we're going to be having some wings, we're going to be eating some beef on Weck. We're going full Buffalo for the Bills on Sunday.
All right. Good luck to you and Matt. Always a pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. That organization is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by my German friend Christophon. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and everybody here at KVOI, including my engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. Have a great weekend, everybody.